Good afternoon. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. It's Monday, June 10th, and thanks for sharing this beautiful day with us. Today we have Melanie Shivens here to talk about this week's open house concerning the Juno Transit Plan. Julie Spiegel and Ralph Steves will highlight the tours offered by the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. We'll meet Mare New, a local student heading to Russia to study ballet, and we'll get a preview of next month's Atlins Art and Music Festival. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Environmental Protection Agency is inspecting properties on Acoma Pueblo in New Mexico for radioactive materials. As Tristan Autone reports, the assessment is one of numerous being conducted in the Southwest and in Indian Country.
Since 2009, the EPA says they've been doing structural assessments of properties near former uranium mills and mines, including the Navajo Nation, Laguna Pueblo, and now Acoma Pueblo. In the case of Acoma, many tribal members worked in uranium mines near the Pueblo, and the EPA says they're concerned that those miners may have brought radioactive materials home from work. The EPA's John Reinhart says companies may have failed to alert workers to health hazards associated with unused ore, and that those materials often wound up in homes or even as decoration.
From what we understand is that early on it was waste material, and a lot of times when you want to make a repair at home, you just grab whatever materials available, and they may not have let them know that this could have been a problem to bring and incorporate in their homes.
Reinhart says the EPA will only be screening homes and properties for uranium ore, and will not be involved in any sort of health evaluations. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
A team of scientists, health educators, and Alaska tribal health organizations are testing the healing properties of traditional medicines. As KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports, a recent class in Anchorage focused on plants used by Alaska Native people.
Marianne Lila is director of the Plants for Human Health Institute at the State University of North Carolina. She's been studying plants Alaska Natives have long used in traditional healing. She says Alaska's climate prompts plants to make chemical defenses that help people with everything from diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and obesity to cancer.
The only defense the plant has is to make this melange of different chemicals inside of itself to protect itself against the environment. A plant can't move, run away. It has to face the environment, and it does so only through its arsenal of chemical defenses. Alaska is one place where the plants are under such stress that they are really jam-packed with these health-beneficial phytochemicals.
During a two-day class, students, elders, and scientists learned how to test for antioxidants, antibiotics, and other healing properties. The idea is to boost understanding of the effectiveness of plants as food and medicine, and to perhaps uncover replacements for pharmaceutical drugs or find new cures for diseases. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Over the weekend, Douglas Pocknick Jr., a Wampanoag tribal member, delivered his high school graduation prayer in his native language. According to the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, Pocknick is the first student at Mashpee High School to earn credit for demonstrating proficiency in the tribe's language. He graduated in traditional regalia at commencement ceremony Saturday in Massachusetts. The 18-year-old plans to attend Cape Cod Community College. Other Native students across the country have been denied tribal traditions and dress at graduation ceremonies this year. A South Dakota school district denied students' request for an honor song, and an Alabama teen was denied her diploma after wearing an eagle feather. A same-sex couple married by a Michigan tribe are invited to the White House this week. According to the Associated Press, Tim LaCroix and Jean Barfield will be guests of President Obama at a reception honoring LGBT Pride Month. The men were married earlier this year by the Little Traverse Bay bands of Ottawa Indians. Barfield marched in Washington, D.C. 20 years ago and returned his military medals because of the former Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The state of Michigan does not recognize same-sex marriage. During this month in 2012, the Justice Department's Office on Violence Against Women announced agreements to cross-designate tribal prosecutors for four tribes. The tribal special U.S. attorneys would pursue violence against women cases in both tribal and federal courts. The Pueblo of Laguna, the Fort Belknap Tribe, the Winnebago Tribe, and the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe were the recipients. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis, with Jeff Brown in the studio running the board. And the weather today is great. It's mostly sunny, high 66 to 72, with a nice northwest wind at 10 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear, lows 42 to 49. Tuesday, mostly sunny, high 71 to 76. Tuesday night, partly cloudy. And it looks like partly cloudy for the rest of the week with highs around 70. So it is summertime in Juno. So here with me in the studio is Melanie Shivens, who works at Scheinberg & Associates, and she's involved with the Juno Transit Plan. They're doing Juno Comprehensive Operations Analysis and Transit Development Plan. So Melanie, what's up with that? I know it was launched late April, and so what's the goal and what's the process?
Sure, and this is not something that's never been done before. This is an update of a plan that was done 5 years ago. So every 5 years that the City and Borough of Juneau wants to take a good hard look at how transit is operating and seeing what's working, what's not working, what could be changed, what is working so beautifully that it shouldn't be touched, and what are the options. And you know, the last one was done about 5 years ago, and so there's a lot of changes that have occurred. For example, we have the Downtown Transportation Center that opened in 2011. We had some doubling of the express route service in 2010 to every 30 minutes. So there's different things to look at and different needs of the community.
Right, and I see here that there's been a 5% increase over the previous year and a 43% increase since 2000 in ridership.
Yeah, there's been a lot of incredible work done on to make the Juno bus system just extremely efficient with the revenues that they have. And there's a lot of people riding the bus. A lot of people ride the bus for work. That's the main reason that people ride the bus. There's a lot of regular riders. They've done a lot. They've put new buses online. There's 150 bus stops around town. They've done a lot of really innovative things to build up ridership. And at this point, you know, we just did the onboard ridership. We surveyed over 1,100 passengers, and the number one complaint is it's too crowded. So in a way, they're doing a very good job, almost too good of a job.
Wow. So I just want to paint the picture here. So Capital Transit has 18 buses, 150 bus stops, as you just said, including 44 bus shelters, 31 full and part-time drivers, and ridership on Capital Transit is around 1.3 million passenger trips in 2012.
Sure, and that's rides, so that's referring to rides.
Right, that's not people, that's rides. So the point of this analysis is obviously the survey is to get a snapshot, and then hopefully you do something based on that snapshot. Is that correct?
Sure. So there's different ways to collect information. So one is the onboard ridership survey that we've already discussed. And the second is to do stakeholder interviews. So Nelson Nygaard and Scheinberg Associates were the consultants working on this for the City and Borough of Juneau. We last month we did several stakeholder surveys with the UAS, with Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority, with the Juneau Coordinated Transportation Coalition, the Juneau Commission on Aging, the Alaska Association for the Education of Young Children, you know, and with employers such as Costco, Fred Meyer, with Juneau Job Services, with Bartlett Nurses. And so that was the stakeholder interview. And really the next phase of it now is to get more input from the community. So we're looking at doing a community survey. That survey is live now. You can take it. It's at junotransitplan.org. And that's actually the website for this whole project. So if you want to go to junotransitplan.org, you can find out all about this project. You can take the survey. You don't have to be a bus rider. You could just have interest in transit and still please go to the website and take the survey. But the other thing we're doing now is trying to get public involvement through that survey, but also through open houses. So there's going to be two open houses on this plan on Juneau Transit. If you want to come, please come out. It's going to be tomorrow in the Valley. That's Tuesday, June 11th, from 4 to 6:30 p.m. at the Valley Library. So if you're in the Valley, come to that one. And on Wednesday, we have another session. It's going to be at the Downtown Library from 4 to 6:30 p.m. again to discuss what are the most important needs of transit in Juneau. Each of those will be from 4 to 6:30 p.m., as I said, and that Nelson Nygaard will have a brief presentation at 5:15. So if you want to come to hear the presentation, that's at 5:15. And then they'll step back. They'll look at a lot of the data, financial data, ridership data, et cetera, and then put together a bunch of different alternatives, a number of different alternatives of what the system could look like. Will it include a downtown circular, for example? Will it ever go to the Lemon Creek Industrial Area or the Glacier? And if it did, what would be the trade-offs there? Because there's only limited revenue, so there'd be trade-offs. And those alternatives will then be again presented to the community in October and again in November, and the final plan will be delivered to the community in March of 2014.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that I think that the open house is tomorrow and Wednesday is the first phase of public comment. So you've done a lot of surveys and you've definitely captured stakeholders. It sounds quite extensive to me. But tomorrow, if you've got something to say, this is the time to hear what the project is about and also to have some input. Is that correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. The City and Borough of Juneau wants your input on this. If you're a rider, if you have thoughts on it, please come and share your opinion. All those opinions will be recorded. They'll be presented as part of this plan, and they'll be included in this plan. So it is really the chance that the public has to say, you know, I have thoughts on this and I have a really good idea, or I have something that's been bothering me and I didn't know who to tell. This is the time to tell. It's great. A really great opportunity.
Great. And then there's also that online survey at junotransit.org, correct?
That's right. And you know, as many people who can take that as possible, it'll make the results better. So
okay. And it seems that it's a CBJ project, but Scheinberg and Associates are the people on the ground, and then Nelson Nygaard, you were saying they're a national company that deals with transit?
Sure. So I work for Scheinberg Associates. We're a local planning firm. And then Nelson Nygaard does these similar types of transit plans all across the nation. And they've actually done one before in Juneau about 10 years ago. They worked on another transit plan here. So they're familiar with Juneau, and they're happy to come back. But they really have a lot of expertise doing this nationally. And I should point out that we're looking at the bus system, so Juneau Transit, but we're also looking at caravan transit. And so those are the vans that pick up people who are senior citizens or who may have disabilities. There's transit that's available for them too, and that is part of this plan.
Okay. All right. Would you like to add anything else, Melanie? Let's talk about the dates and times one more time.
Okay, sure. So please come. The first open house will be tomorrow in the Valley Library. It's from 4 to 6:30 p.m. And then if you can't go to that one or you just live downtown, please come on Wednesday, June 12th, to the Downtown Library, also from 4 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. with the brief presentation at 5:15. And if you can't make either of those, please just go to the junotransitplan.org website. That's junotransitplan.org. Take the survey, sign up for to be on the mailing list about this project, and you'll hear everything and find out everything you need to know to be involved.
That sounds great. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hello, you're listening to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Joan Pardis, for Mondays, and Jeff Brown's on the board. And in the studio with me now is Julie Spiegel and Ralph Steves from the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. Hello, Julie. Hello, Ralph.
Hi, Joan.
Hello, Joan.
Thank you for sharing this beautiful day with me and everyone out there. So let's talk about the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. We were just chatting before we went on air, and it seems like there's 130 employees at this institute. And what is the purpose of this institute? What is its function?
Well, the function of the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, which the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute is part of, is to provide the science behind the sustainable fisheries for Alaska fisheries, which are the most sustainable and valuable fisheries in the world.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. That sounds great. So, and there's tours of this facility that's here in Juneau?
Absolutely, yes. For the past few years, Ralph has been running tours every summer. For locals and for people who come to visit locals, we really don't have the capacity to do a large group of people, so that's why we sort of cater to the locals, which is good.
Right, and you do tours during the year, too, with schools. Is that true, or is it mostly in the summer?
Well, for me, the tours are conducted during the summer months. With the exception of calling in and making an appointment, I'll do a special tour for people that that know they're going to be here for a given day, but I'm not out there every single day during the winter months. And Benita Nelson is the outreach educator that works mostly with the students.
Mm-hmm.
However, with the Science on the Sphere, which is something that is a wonderful educational tool we have get to use, we have had students start to come in the fall and into the midwinter also that have given us a subject area that they're studying, and we go ahead and make a program specifically to that subject area.
Okay.
So it's a little different than what Benita would be doing with her groups.
Right. Well, let's get back to the tours that we were just talking about. I was just curious. I was pretty sure that I had heard that some students had gone out there, so I kind of went off on a tangent. But let's come back to these summer tours. So if I was to take a visiting relative or friend out to the institute, what would we experience? What would we see?
Well, the tour through the building itself runs at about 55 minutes, and it includes talking about the history of fisheries in this particular area, all the way back to the Alaska Native people who were such great managers of the water, even though I doubted they ever used the word sustainability. They made darn sure that protein was there year after year. And then we start to explore into the laboratories, into the biology labs, the chemistry labs, and we do touch by what's called a wet laboratory, where a lot of experimentation is being done, as opposed to the other labs, which are primarily analytical studies happening. But in the wet lab, which is an area with a whole lot of salt water coming in from the ocean, and they're doing different kinds of experiments on ocean acidification, things like that. And so we take a visit through there, and there's always a touch tank in there that's set up that looks like a natural tide pool, which is always enjoyable by everybody. We do these tours are all for adults, 16 and older, because the content area is specifically aiming at that level. But even adults love to get their hands wet and see what a sea star feels like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Julie's pointing to Ralph that I think he likes doing it too. It never gets old.
Oh, yeah, you have to go first.
Exactly, you have to show.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. And so these tours take about 55 minutes. Are they daily, like you go at a certain time, or do you call and say, hey, I have some relatives and I really want to check this out?
During the summer months, that's a good question. During the summer months, we do that every day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And so far, you wouldn't have to make reservations, but as time goes on and word of mouth gets out that we're doing them again, it's well worth making a phone call, and that's 789-6050. And just leave a message, and I'll make sure that you have a spot on. I can only take 12 at a time. We go into some fairly confined locations, and I can't take more than that on any given tour.
Okay. And is there a fee associated with this?
No, there's no fee. Actually, everybody's already paid their fee when they paid their income tax.
All righty. And you've been there. I have a feeling that you're a long-time employee over there. Is that true?
Well, this is my fourth summer doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a long-time person there, but I've been involved since I retired from teaching for 30 years in kinds of tours like this. I mean, my first year here, I worked for Gastineau Guiding up on top of Mount Roberts. And then before I moved here, I worked at the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward, which is an aquarium research center.
Right.
And so that kind of work I'm very familiar with. And I'm getting more and more familiar with what NOAA does, which is very impressive once you start studying it and getting ready to share it with our visitor.
Right. That's where I was going is, so you probably feel people from all over the world and locals who have never been in there too. Is there like the favorite part of your job of like, oh, I really love it when we go to this lab or that lab or something along those lines?
I really love meeting the people. And I really love working with what is often referred in the business as drag-alongs. Those are people that are coming because their wife or their husband really wants to go, and they're going because they've sort of been asked to go. And body language is very easy to read, and to see that person who's just sort of being dragged along start to get involved and starting to really show an interest. And by the time they're ending the tour, they're totally into the information that we're sharing. That's really exciting part. That's what teachers really love in the classroom when the little lights go on, and that same thing happens with adults.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. That sounds wonderful. The people who are there to appease whomever, and then they actually become the raving advocates.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
So, Julie, do you have anything else you'd like to add about the tours or the Institute or what's
just
going on?
Certainly want to encourage people to come out and see it. It's one of our crown jewel science labs for NOAA, and it's right here in Juneau, and a lot of people don't really realize it's there. It's actually so fascinating what they do at the lab and how it's applicable to management of our fisheries here in Alaska. So I definitely encourage people to get out there and check it out.
Right. So if you're just joining us, we're talking to Julie Spiegel and Ralph Steves from the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute right here in Juneau. We're talking about the free tours during the summer at 1 o'clock every day. And it's a 55-minute tour for people 16 and older, and it will show the science of what's going on in our waters and the management of Alaska, which, of course, is what you were saying, a crown jewel of, probably the world, but definitely the states for sure.
We definitely have world-renowned fisheries here in Alaska.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, Ralph, it looks like you have something to say.
I do. I didn't mention the fact that I briefly mentioned something about the science on the spear, which is an educational tool that there's only 94 of them in the world, and most places they're in really high-profile locations, like in Washington, D.C. They're at the Smithsonian in Chicago. They're at the Museum of Science and Industry. Juneau is the only city in the world that has two of them. We have one, and it's the smallest venue of any place that's placed in the world, and then also the State Museum has one. And after our tour, there's usually about a 4 or 5 minute break, and I set up the program for Science on the Spear. And it runs about 22 minutes, and it does the subject area is all about the things that NOAA does other than just fisheries. So it talks about the weather forecasting system, the tsunami warning systems, the other services that are provided to the United States public by the agency of NOAA.
Yeah, and those spheres are amazing. I saw one at the Alaska State Museum. And how Julie was referring to Ralph, that there's the kid in him who really likes to touch tanks. I don't know anybody could go in front of that sphere and not have your mouth drop open because it is just really amazing. So there's two of them here, and there's one with a guided tour at 1 o'clock every day at the Ted Marine Institute out the road. So go check it out. Thanks for being here.
Thanks
so much, Joan and Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, June 10th, 2013. It's the birthday of biologist and writer Edward O. Wilson, born in Birmingham, Alabama, in 1929. When he was a boy, his father's job as a government accountant forced the family to move so often that he attended 14 different public schools in 11 years. In his autobiography, The Naturalist, he wrote, "A nomadic existence made nature my companion of choice, because the outdoors was the one part of my world I perceived to hold rock steady." His research was presented in the books Sociobiology and the Pulitzer Prize-winning On Human Nature. It's the birthday of novelist Saul Bellow, born in Lachine, Quebec. He grew up in Chicago, the city that would become the setting of many of his novels. He was often sick as a child, spent his time reading the classics of literature. He once said, "I came humbly, hat in hand, to literary America. I didn't ask for much. I had a book or two to publish. I didn't expect to make any money at it. I saw myself at the tail end of a great glory." Bella was working part-time for the Encyclopedia Britannica when his first novel, Dangling Man, was published. It didn't sell a lot of copies, so he went off and served in the Marines. He spent most of 1948 in France with his wife, hoping to gather material for a book. But he grew depressed. His novel was going nowhere. The weather was dreary. So he started writing a new novel about a young man's adventures in Chicago just before the Great Depression. That novel became The Adventures of Augie March, and it was his first big success. Bellow's other novels include Henderson the Rain King, Herzog, and Humboldt Gift. He died in 2005 at the age of 89. It's the birthday of novelist and short story writer James Salter, born James Horowitz in New York City in 1925. He went to West Point, became a pilot in the Air Force, and flew 100 combat missions in the Korean War, and served as a squadron leader before retiring to become a writer. The first two novels were based on his experience as a combat pilot, and next came what he called The First Good Thing I Wrote, A Sport and a Pastime, a novel about the love affair between a Yale dropout living in Paris and a working-class French girl. James Salter said, "The writer's life exists for only a small number. It can be glorious, especially after death. There are provincial, national, and world writers. One should compete in one's class, despise riches, as Whitman says, and take off your hat to no one." And here's a poem by Liesl Mueller entitled Losing My Sight. I never knew that by August the birds are practically silent, only a twitter here and there. Now I notice. Last spring their noisiness taught me the difference between screamers and whistlers and cooers and, oh, the coloraturas. I have already mastered the subtlest pitches in our cat's elegant Chinese. As the river turns muddier before my eyes, its sighs and little smacks grow louder. Like a spy, I pick up things indiscriminately, the long approach of a truck, car doors slammed in the dark, the nightlife of animals shrieks and hisses, sex and plunder in the garage. Tonight the crickets spread static across the air, a continuous rope of sound extended to me, the perfect listener. A poem by Liesl Mueller entitled Losing My Sight from her collection Alive Together, published by Louisiana State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses look their best when people search for them online. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. And this is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Hello, you are listening to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Partis. Jeff Brown's on the board. And now in the studio with me is Mari Nu. She's a 16-year-old Junoite who's been dancing for quite some time. And Mari was she's one of 15 students who received this scholarship through the National Security Language Initiative for Youth, which is part of the U.S. Department of State and the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs and the Russian American Foundation, to go study Russian language and Russian dance in Moscow in the fall. So, later this summer. Hi, Mari. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's talk about what is going on. So last year, you were involved with an intensive dance experience in New York through the Bolshoi Institute?
Yes, the Bolshoi Ballet Academy Summer Intensive in New York City.
Right. And at that time, did you become aware of this possible scholarship?
Yes. I actually applied for it last year, and I was an alternate. I found out through it when I auditioned and was accepted to the program in New York. Then you have the opportunity to audition for the NSOIY program to go to Moscow.
Okay. And in the New York Institute, the intensive, there's
typically 150 students from around the States.
Yes.
And out of those...
All over the world.
All over
actually,
the world.
Yes.
And then 15 of those are picked for this scholarship opportunity.
15 U.S. students
okay.
are picked for this scholarship.
And is there an age range for this scholarship
group? 15 to 18.
Okay. And then you get to study with the 235-year-old Bolshoi Ballet Academy. That
yes.
must be really
in
exciting.
Moscow. I'm very excited.
In
yes.
Moscow. And then you'll be staying with a host family on the weekends
mm-hmm.
and at the academy during it. And the goal is what while you're there in Moscow?
Well, the goal is to the goal of the NSOIY program is to really instill a lifelong love of learning languages in U.S. citizens and students, and really to develop better connections between very important countries such as Russia and China and all over the world. It's really important because people need to go and see what those countries are like for themselves so that we don't have all these false misconceptions. And we want to try to build the positive relationships, especially between the U.S. and Russia, which is what this program focuses on.
Right. So dance is the conduit, but that's the overall reaching goal
yes.
that you just described beautifully. So have you been fascinated with Russia your whole life, or did this opportunity present itself and you say, wow, this is what I have to do?
Well, when I was training in New York in 2011 at the Joffrey Ballet School, the Mariinsky Ballet came on tour to New York, and I had the opportunity to see them perform. It was just utterly blown away. There's really nothing like Russian ballet. It's just phenomenal. And then later that year, Irina Kuznetsova, who's a corps de ballet dancer with the Mariinsky Ballet, actually came to Juneau and taught a weekend of master classes, and it was just absolutely amazing, and I really got interested in Russian ballet then, and obviously Russia has quite a connection with Alaska, so I studied a lot more about that during my freshman year in high school, and really just became interested in then, and have been wanting to learn more ever since.
That sounds great. So what was the process like to get this scholarship?
You have to write several essays. You have to get a letter of recommendation from two teachers. It's a lot of work, lots of paperwork, lots of thinking, and then if you make it to the semifinals, if they approve your essays and your application, and you make it to the next round, it's the semi-finalist round, and then you have an interview. So for me, obviously, being in Alaska, it wasn't in person, it was a phone call. They spent half an hour interviewing me and then half an hour interviewing my mom, and just really wanted to get to know me and why I was interested in this program and why I would be a good ambassador for the U.S.
Right. And did you have to audition as well?
For the
scholarship, or no?
Yes. Well, the writing the essays and the interviewing part of that.
Right.
Process.
And you've already, as far as the dance, you're already in that contained group. You already got
yes.
into the intensive group.
Yes.
So do you know your other 14 scholarship mates?
I do, actually. Two of them were in my class last year, which is really fun. And then another one I knew, he was one of my partners during partnering class.
Oh, that's great. So you go to New York, and then you go from New York to Russia.
Yes, so we spend 3 weeks at the New York Intensive, and then on July 13th, we fly to Moscow.
Oh, that's so exciting. So have you been out of the country before?
I have. I've been very fortunate to have traveled a lot. My family are very involved in the Scottish arts, and my brothers and my dad are in a pipe band, and so we would travel to Canada a lot, and I did a lot of Scottish Highland dancing. I only started ballet when I was 12, so I would travel to Canada and compete there in Scottish dancing, and I've been to London. We have really close friends there, and this past summer I got to go to Paris for a day, which is really fun. I've really been quite fortunate. I've been really a lot of places in the world.
Okay. When you get to Moscow, what are the things that you're really looking forward to?
Oh, my goodness, so much. Really seeing the Bolshoi Ballet Academy and getting to dance there has really been a dream of mine for a long time, and I'm very excited about that. St. Basil's Cathedral, taking in the language and the culture, I just am so excited.
And how are you preparing as far as the language is concerned?
I have Rosetta Stone. I'm mm-hmm. learning from that, and I have a few friends. I know some people who actually spent 2 years there just recently, so I've been talking to them and really just trying to talk to people who do speak Russian and try to get a leg up on the language. So.
Right. Oh, it sounds so exciting. So, Marie, will you come back? When you come back, will you come back on the show and tell us a little bit about the experience?
I will. I'd love to. I'd be delighted.
That would be great. We'd love to do that.
Thank you.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
And have a wonderful time.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Thanks.
This is Bird Note. In early June, millions of birds arrive on the Arctic coastal plain in Alaska from all over the world. They're there to attract a mate and raise their young. They'll feed on the explosion of insect life that happens in the brief spring. Nature photographer Garrett Vinn takes us there.
So when the shorebirds arrive, it's an absolutely spectacular event. As soon as they get up there, these male shorebirds of all different types begin all of these unique displays. If you go up there on a calm, still spring evening when the winds subside, all of these birds just lift off the ground, and the tundra can appear barren, and within a few hours you just hear thousands of birds in every direction calling and singing. There's one shorebird species, the pectoral sandpiper, where the male has this pectoral sac in its chest that it'll stand on the ground for a while and flate the sac and then take off on these sort of moth-like buoyant flights low over the tundra, emitting this incredibly resonant hooting song as it's circling its territory, trying to chase off other males and attract a female. It's a really incredible thing to see this bird floating towards you, uttering this loud, resonant hooting sound.
The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Learn more at birdnote.org, and we'll tell you how to follow Garrett's work on Facebook.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host of Juno Afternoon. And in the studio is Jeff Brown and Mari New, because we called the coordinator for Atlin and we're having some technical difficulties, and Mari's still here and I have some more questions. So, Mari, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, no problem.
And talking more. So I want to talk to you about how did you started dancing when you were 3. You started ballet at 12. You've kind of been really fascinated with the Russian element for the last couple of years. How did dance, how did it become dance for you? Everybody seems to have, I mean, obviously this is a passion and you have a gift. I've seen Mari dance. She's really quite extraordinary, both in the Highland dance and recently at a spring recital from JDU and doing ballet. But how did you know that this was something that you really wanted to invest your time to really, really, really practice and get really good?
Well, for one, I'm a very nitpicky kind of person. I love how I can go to the studio every day and you're always working to perfect something. It's never good enough. It's never quite there, which is makes it very interesting because you always have stuff to work on. I feel like it's really, in this day and age, we don't really get in touch with our bodies that much, and it's really, really good for me to, you know, be able to know that when I do a tendu, I know how to turn out my leg and I know how to point my foot, and to share, it's so much fun to be dancing on stage, and performing is really phenomenal. If I can even just share my joy with even just one person in the audience, it's definitely worth it for me.
Well, you definitely do, because it comes through how much you love it and also all the work that you've put into it. And why ballet? So you've done Scottish Highland Dance, your family, that's a passion of your family's, and you've done, I know there's tournaments all over the place. Are they called tournaments? I think they are.
For Highland?
Yeah, Highland Dance.
Yeah, normally I would compete at the Highland Games.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's the Highland Games. Thank you for that. And then at 12, you know, you didn't just wake up and say, oh, no, now it's ballet.
No.
Or was it like that?
I saw the Nutcracker, for JDU's Nutcracker, for the first time in 2008, and was really inspired because I had never seen ballet, never seen the Nutcracker before. Not live, anyway. And then I took a modern class at JDU in the summer and was taught by Kaylee Neary. And Kaylee Neary used to be a very, very beautiful dancer at JDU, definitely one of my inspirations. And she was teaching my modern class during the summer. And she said, if you want to dance more, you should go take ballet at JDU. And I said, oh, okay, I'll try it. So I started up that fall in 2009 and was a party boy in the Nutcracker that year. I've danced Scottish Highland dancing, and I've danced modern and ballet and theater dance. For me, I had to stop doing Scottish Highland dancing competitively because I had Achilles tendonitis and shin splints. When you jump, you don't put your heel down, so there's lots of impact, and you know, you take a lot of strain from that, and my body just wasn't able to handle it at that point. So switching to ballet, where you do put your heels down when you jump, I was able to work at it with the same competitiveness and not competitiveness necessarily, but the same hard work and pickiness that I could with my Scottish Highland dancing, but it wasn't as hard on my body. And then just working on it over the past few years, I've just really grown to love it.
I think that's the first time I've heard ballet referred to as it wasn't as hard as my body or something else. Because when you think of ballet, you think about so many different things of, oh, you have to be young, and that, you know, by the mid-20s, the ballet, you know, ballerina's career might be on you know, at its apex already. So it's really interesting to hear from that. But I've
funny,
seen the Scottish Highland Dance, so I know what you're talking about. It's just obviously each body is different, and it's a different form.
Yes.
And it seems that's what's really is interesting to you, is the challenge and the exacting form that you're trying to accomplish.
Yes, Absolutely. And with experience in other dance forms, some people love modern because they feel so much freer in ballet. But for me, I love the challenge of being free while also being conformed to these certain positions and these certain movements. And it's finding the way to express yourself in those movements. It's so fun and fascinating for me.
No, that's great. So if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Mari New, and Mari New is a local Junoite. She's 16 years old. She's going to study in New York with the Bolshoi Academy, a ballet academy, and then going to Russia to study there, and that is part of a scholarship that there's 15 youth coming from the States to do this.
Yep.
And she knows a few of them from last year's summer intensive at the Bolshoi. And I know there's a handful of ballet students who go to these summer intensives from mm-hmm. Juno. And I just think it's really great that our local resource, JDU, is turning out dancers who are prepared and also obviously in love with the art to pursue it more.
Mm-hmm. So absolutely. We've got Misha Culver is going to Alvin Ailey this summer. Anu Gotsi is going to Houston Ballet. Gabby DuVernay is going to Boston Ballet. Marissa True is going to Pittsburgh. Annika Brayton is going to Ballet West. It's really amazing. You know, Juno's such an amazing town. We're really lucky to have such an incredible ballet teacher here, Philip Crowder. We're just really lucky that we have JDU here.
Right. And as you were talking about what you love about ballet, the form and the structure and the way to express your individuality within that form.
Mm-hmm.
It must be really exciting to go to, if it's 235 years old, the Bolshoi Academy, Ballet Academy in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming it's the oldest ballet academy, known ballet academy, is that true?
It's definitely one of them, yes. It's got a very long history. The Vaganova method, which is the style of ballet that they train in, is just, it's very old. It's very classical. It's probably the most pure of all the techniques. There's Balanchine, and it's got Balanchine is more George Balanchine was a Russian who defected to America and started New York City Ballet. And New York City Ballet is much more kind of contemporary ballet with very extreme wrists and fast footwork. Whereas that opposed to Vaganova, which is very classical, very pure. The lines are very long. There's lots of emphasis on upper body and hands and arms. So it's definitely different. And none of them are better than the other. But I love Vaganova the most.
Wow, that just sounds amazing. And part of the scholarship that you have, it's the citizen ambassador. There's a citizen ambassador aspect of it. So you're going, you're learning about the Russian culture. You'll come back. You'll be an advocate. You'll be learned about the Russian world as we, right now, not, 235
right.
years ago,
yes.
but modern Russia
yes.
in Moscow. Is there something when you come back that you have to do as far as the citizen ambassador? Is there a part two of the scholarship, or do you go to the ballet mm-hmm. in New York and then you go and to Moscow for how long again is it?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then is there a part two or part three to it?
There's not a organized part two, but they definitely encourage everyone to come back and, share with their community what they've learned, and really just, for me, I would love to keep teaching people about Russia and sharing my experiences. I'm hoping to write a blog this summer. We'll see how that goes. But it's just very important for us to not only just go over there and learn about it ourselves, but to bring it back to the U.S. and share it with everyone here.
That sounds great. And as we discussed in the last segment, we'd really like to have you come back and talk about the experience.
Thank you.
Because I'm really intrigued. And just have a wonderful time. And thanks again for your time
today.
Thank
you so much.
Hi, I'm UAS Chancellor John Pugh. Sometimes a student needs incentives to study more or graduate in a timely manner. The CBJ thinks we all need incentives to make sure our garbage doesn't endanger the life of a bear or ours. That's why they've created a sliding scale of fines to make sure you keep garbage stored in a bear-resistant enclosure and don't put it out until after 4 a.m. on pickup day. So get more information at juno.org/bears today.
Next up, we're going to listen to some Harry Makes, who is going to be the guest artist at the Atlin Music Fest this summer.
advice and habit, trying to save your face, but need some loving, girl. No, no, I have it just to decorate your place. Dog, my cat, can't you scratch that itch? Well, things were so much more simple when we didn't have a stitch. Bring that thing back home. Bring that thing, oh, 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 back home.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're going to wrap up the show here, but before we go, there's a couple of things that I'd like to share. Once again, Melanie Shivens was on the show. She was the first guest today, and she was here to talk about ways to improve public transit services in Juneau. If you've got something to share about transit, the transportation services here, this is your time. There's an open house tomorrow at the Valley from 4 to 6:30 at the Valley Library, and on Wednesday at the Downtown Library, 4 to 6:30. There's brief presentations at 5:15 about the survey process, and this is your time to share what you've got to say. If you're talking about it at the dinner table, let's get it to the proper sources so something can be done. And that website is junotransit.org. Tonight, tune in at 7 o'clock to hear Dr. Elaine Schroeder. She'll be back with her live show, Mind Over Matter. Tonight's show will explore the social and psychological roots of domestic abuse with guest Sarah Lynn Tabachnik from Aware. So you definitely want to tune in at 7 o'clock tonight. And tomorrow, Annie Bartholomew hosts Juno Afternoon, and there'll be featuring Juno World Affairs Council meeting featuring Governor Sean Parnell, and details about Wednesday's morning Idle No More rally. As far as the weather, it's fantastic. Tonight is clear, lows around 47, a wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow sunny, highs around 72, west wind increasing to 10 to 15 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night, mostly clear, lows 46 to 52, except around 38 in wind-sheltered areas. Wednesday, partly cloudy. Wednesday night, partly cloudy. I am looking on right through the weekend, and I don't see any rain. So thank you for joining us today at KTOO Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. I'm in the studio with Jeff Brown, who runs the board. Have yourself a great day.